This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
And I'm Orion Samuelson saying good morning at 10 minutes after 5 on the beginning of a very nice day, it looks like, till later in the day, but certainly clear this morning. And temperature at our studios here in Huntley, Illinois at 62 degrees this morning. So very nice day. The Saturday morning show, we look forward to this every week. Max Armstrong will be checking in a little bit later to talk markets. And you can't talk markets today without talking about what happened this week in Britain. It certainly shook up the markets yesterday, but my feeling is when you get this kind of a downturn, it'll take a day or two, but then some of the savvy stock market buyers will say, boy, I haven't seen the price of that stock this low for a long time. I better buy some. And I think that it won't be the end of the world, friends, although some people are saying it is right now. I do want to begin by saying thank you to all of you who joined us a week ago today. We had a great time. Lindale Holstein Farm in Hampshire, Illinois, just south of where we are right now. And we had Dale and Linda Drendel, the farm owners and operators, along with their family there. Bill Lenchow, who's been involved in the dairy industry forever, served as chairman of the two-county event. And I would guess they had anywhere from 16, 17, maybe even up to 1,800 people that joined us on the farm at for the June Dairy Month breakfast in the farm just a week ago today. Talking to Linda, I asked her, what are the questions that non-farm visitors are asking today? And I was a little surprised at what she said was probably the number one question. Why do you separate the mothers from their calves shortly after they're born? And her response was, we do it for the safety of the calves and to get them started. And they, within 8 weeks or so, have to begin to move into the herd itself. It'll be probably 18 to 24 months before they'll produce a calf and start producing milk. But she said there was real concern about separating the calf from their mom. Other questions they were asking, how often do you milk? Well, in their case, twice a day. Some farms, three times a day. How often do they get fed? Well, twice a day. And so a lot of interesting questions. I saw a lot of youngsters sitting in the seat of this tractor that is as big as a house nearly. Good time, good weather, and to all of you who join us here on WGN Radio every morning, not just now, but over the decades, thank you for coming up to say hello. Stephen, Johnny, I know, had a great time, and as a lot of you dairy farmers pointed out, Stephen, Johnny were on the barn radio for years in the morning because the day starts early on the dairy farm, and so the barn radio would be on, Stephen, Johnny would be there, and we'd be on at 5 o'clock. But all in all, very, very good day at the Lindale Holstein Farm in Hampshire, Illinois. Well, there's probably work to do in the garden this weekend, so we'll check in with Jim Fazell when we continue on the Saturday morning show. We say good morning to Jim Fazell as we go into the, the first weekend of summer and the final week of June. So what are we looking at this week in the garden, sir?
Well, I'll tell you, it's really a beautiful time of year. The gardens are doing terrifically because we're getting plenty of degree days, and we've talked about that many times in the past. The warm weather is just exactly what they want. We could stand a little bit of moisture periodically. If we get an inch a week, that would be great, and if we don't, we probably need to do some spotty watering. Anyway, the kids are out of school. It's time for vacations. But if you're heading out for vacation, you need to make some preparations, too, because taking care of your plantings while on vacation is necessary, especially if you want to come back to plantings that have survived it. First of all, with houseplants, and a lot of folks, whether they're outdoor gardeners or not, do have houseplants. If you're going to be gone for a week, you need to soak them thoroughly before you leave. And what I like to do with that is to take them to the kitchen sink or to the bathtub, soak them thoroughly, let the water run through, drain, and then put them back in a cool, shaded place somewhere in the house where they're going to be out of direct sun and they're going to be out of any breeze if the air conditioning comes on. Now, if you're going to be gone a week, that works. If you're going to be gone more than a week, say 2 weeks, you do need to water the plants thoroughly, but you need to set them in the bathtub with maybe some shallow water so that they can absorb that while you're gone. I don't mean soaking the pots clear, but maybe an inch of water in the bottom. And use a wick watering or use a wick watering system. Now, these are available from garden centers and garden supply places where they use a wick that actually goes in each pot so that they absorb water from a container someplace in that vicinity. Now, if you're going to be gone longer than 2 weeks, you need to arrange for somebody to come in and do the watering, make sure the plants are okay, make sure that if the leaves turn yellow on them, they get those taken off. Anyway, I'll talk a little bit about arranging for people to come in a minute. With your garden plants outdoors, you need to get the weeds out as best you can before you leave because they're going to grow whether you're there or not, and it seems like when you're gone, they grow even faster. Apply fungicides to susceptible plants, particularly if we have more wet weather anticipated. If you've had bug problems, you need to put some bug killer out too. And snail bait if you have things like hostas, which are very susceptible to damage from snails. Pick all the produce, and a lot of us already have stuff that's coming in. If you're going to be gone for a while, have someone come in and pick the things that ripen while you're gone. They can use them. They might as well use them up while they're good and fresh, and they'll probably enjoy that. Cut back the annuals if they're getting a little bit oversized so that when you come back, they'll be done with their regrowing and will be flowering for you. If you haven't done so already, get your flowering bulbs cleaned up, remove the foliage, remove the spent blooms from your spring flowering shrubs and the peonies and so forth, and stake and tie up all the tall things that could fall over while you're gone, especially if we have a windy thunderstorm while you're on vacation. Outdoor containers. Now, those can be problems because they dry out very quickly. You need to water them thoroughly before you leave, just like I mentioned for your houseplants. Set them in a shady place. You don't want them somewhere where they're going to get baked while you're gone every afternoon. And particularly if you're in one of the high-rises, put them in a place where they're not going to get a lot of wind. It may be necessary to put some kind of screening up to stop that. A little burlap hanging down on the side of the gallery would take care of that. Arrange for a neighbor to come in and do the watering. Now, this has to be a good friend because sometimes these take watering once a day and sometimes even more if it's really hot and dry. For the lawn outdoors, you need to mow the lawn and edge it so it looks as good as possible before you leave. Then you need to arrange for someone to cut the grass while you're gone. You need to water everything well. And again, arrange to have somebody do watering if it really gets dry. One of the things we don't think about when we leave on vacation or before we leave on vacation is our pets. Now, they're as important as the plants, probably even more so. With cats, you know, they can stay a week or so if they're visited every day by somebody. You need to be able to feed, water, and clean the litter box for these little animals and spend some time with them. Usually, if you've been there a day or two, you'll find out that they've been lonesome and they'll come and sit on your lap, even as standoffish as cats are. Now, with dogs, it's even worse because they suffer unless somebody's there to walk them at least twice a day, and a lot of them suffer from separation anxiety. You need to take them along if you can, and most places will allow them if they're well-trained. But if you can't, have a friend at least come in and take care of them twice a day. Or we used to have a friend when we had pets like that would take the dog home for a vacation so the dog would spend the week with them or whatever it was. And sometimes they didn't want to leave and come back home when you got there because they'd had such a good time. Your household, stop your papers and your mail. Turn down the water heater. Set your air conditioner at 78 degrees. In fact, in most homes, they're so well insulated, if you have the temperature under control before you leave, you can probably turn the air conditioner off unless you have 100-degree weather expected. And when you get home, it might be 80 degrees or 82 degrees, but you won't have been running the air conditioner continuously while you're gone just to keep the house cool while you're not there to enjoy it. Set some kind of a timer up for the outside lights so they come on at night. You need to have somebody watch. If you have a timer and you have power outages, which are not uncommon around here, you need to have somebody that can come in and reset the timers. Otherwise, the lights will be coming on at 2 o'clock in the morning and going off at 5, and everybody's going to know you're gone. Motion detector lights work. Also, there are lights now that will not come on until it gets dark out, and they will go off at whatever time you set them to go off. Make sure you have all your doors and windows locked. Make sure your garage is locked as well, especially if it's attached to the house. It's important that your caretakers are taught how you want things taken care of. You need to have them come in at least once and go through the whole procedure before you leave, like cutting the grass or etching and so forth. And you need to have them familiar with the pets. Now, this is important if your neighbor caretaker is a youngster. A lot of high school kids don't really know how to do these things, but take a time or two to show them how you want that grass cut and so forth. And last of all, leave contact numbers for emergencies. So if you've taken care of all this, you can take your time, go on and vacation, and know that when you get back, everything's going to be fine.
Indeed, it will be, and it does take some work to get everything ready. I do have to tell you about watering. Gloria uses, I guess I'd call them ceramic spikes, and you take an empty wine bottle, fill it with water, and then you put it upside down in the spike and into the potted plant, and it'll keep water going into that as needed for a long time, and it gives her an excuse to have a glass or two of wine every night.
You betcha. That's right. You need a lot of those bottles.
Yes, indeed.
But they do work very well. That's an excellent way to do it, and it's very similar to the wick watering where you use actually a wick instead of this porcelain. It's a ceramic.
It's a clay, right. Clay right. Composition, right.
Right. But they work very well. Anyway, have a great vacation if you're going on one.
Well, not yet, but we'll be traveling a little bit later this summer, and we look forward to talking to you next week. Golly, we'll be in July already, won't we?
Oh, yeah. Isn't that amazing? Mm. Okay, we'll look forward to it, Orion.
Jim Fazell, our specialist in ornamental horticulture here on the Saturday Morning Show. 28 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Saturday morning, and with all the attention going to the Brexit vote yesterday, there probably wasn't as much attention as should have been given to a couple of agricultural reports. We got the hog and pig inventory count for the end of June, and some bearish surprises, according to Dennis Smith with Archer Financial Services. The numbers: total hogs and pigs on farms up 2% over a year ago. The number kept for breeding up 1%. The number kept for marketing up 2%. And according to Dennis, two items stand out as a bearish surprise. First, the March-May farrowings came in above expectations by 1%. And secondly, the pigs per litter now at 10.48. That's record large. And the March-May pig crop at 30.3 million is the largest spring pig crop in 45 years. Breeding numbers increased in Illinois, Minnesota, Nebraska, North Carolina, Oklahoma, and South Dakota. So he's looking for a negative opening in the hog market Monday morning at the Mercantile Exchange. The other report that came out says if you like to do steaks and hamburgers on the grill, it may not cost as much. The monthly cattle on feed report came out yesterday afternoon, and the number of cattle placed on feed during the previous month, May, up by 10% over a year ago. That says that we're going to get increased supplies of beef. And a monthly report yesterday said 1,884,000 head of cattle were placed in feedlots last month. And cattle in feedlots as of June 1st totaled 10,783,000, up 1%. The marketing of cattle during the month came in at 1,794,000 head. That's up 5% from last year. We've watched that cattle market tumble, and it probably is going to be a little bit weaker on Monday, although most analysts were expecting that kind of an increase in the numbers that were issued yesterday by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And a few more June Dairy Month breakfasts on the calendar this weekend, most of them in Wisconsin. And if you have the opportunity to attend and participate, by all means, do it. Right now, we're at the 5:30 mark here on the Saturday morning show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN and WGNradio.com. Thank you very much, Laura. 25 minutes before 6 o'clock, the start of a beautiful Saturday here in the Midwest area. And yesterday, flying the Air Orion from Huntley out to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, got a good look at crops below. And, of course, the landscape has now turned from the brown of soil and mud to the green of corn and soybeans and a few yellow fields out there with winter wheat ripening as well. But a good look at crop conditions all in all from here to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, from 4,500 feet, looked pretty good. More about that trip coming up, but right now, welcome to Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson reminding you the battle over trade agreements continues, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But right now, let's talk about your glass ceramic cooktop and keeping it clean, because you love it, but when it's time to clean it, a little work involved. Except there's a product out there now that will leave your cooktop sparkling clean. It is Wink Glass Ceramic Cooktop Cleaner, strong enough to remove those greasy, grungy spots, gentle enough for smooth top ranges. It cleans, polishes, and conditions smooth top ranges. And special conditioners leave a protective coating which helps prevent scratches. That's Wink Cooktop Cleaner. You can learn more about that product and the full family of Wink cleaning products at wink.com. That's WHINK.com. And now, the subject of trade agreements. We are hearing very little meaningful conversation in the halls of Congress recently about the Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership Agreement. But then, come to think of it, we're not hearing much of anything meaningful in the way of conversation or legislation coming out of the halls of Congress because it is election year, and members are spending more time trying to keep their job than passing meaningful legislation. But I can assure you, behind the election rhetoric, behind the scenes, the battle over the agreement goes on. Agriculture would like to see the agreement passed. It could expand agricultural trade, expand our markets, and it could mean more jobs in this country. And it's interesting to see the arguments that are coming out asking for a no vote. You may recall a few weeks ago I talked about a letter sent to the members of Congress by representatives of 220 agricultural groups. Well, a few days ago, more than 450 groups called on Congress to reject the Trans-Pacific Partnership, saying the trade deal would allow fossil fuel companies to contest U.S. environmental rules in courts outside the United States. The groups, most of them environmental organizations, warned that companies could challenge U.S. environmental standards in courts outside the domestic legal system under provisions of the 12-nation Pacific Agreement and the proposed Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership with Europe. And so the letter said, "We strongly urge you to eliminate this threat to U.S. climate progress by committing to vote no on the Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement." And, of course, presidential candidates and their campaigns have called to eliminate trade agreements, to cancel some of those that we already have. And Hillary Clinton, who was Secretary of State, supported the agreement, now says, as a candidate, she wants to renegotiate the agreement, to include stronger rules. Well, you can't do that under the rules that saw the 12 member nations pass the agreement. The battle goes on. Take every opportunity you have to convince your member of the House and the Senate to vote yes on the Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. And we'll be hearing from Max Armstrong and his guest, Brian Basting, in just a few minutes. And I do want to point out that the interview with Brian was recorded Thursday before we had the results of the vote on Great Britain's membership in the European Union. So some things have changed a little bit, but still the fundamentals of the markets haven't changed that much. So we'll join Max and Brian when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
Rains came this week to some of the biggest grain-producing counties of Illinois and Indiana. We're sitting down to talk about it with Brian Basting, Advanced Trading, Bloomington, Illinois. It occurred to me that, yeah, when you take a look at LaSalle County, Illinois, and Iroquois County, Illinois, and Newton County, Indiana, Montgomery County, Indiana, White County, those typically rank in the top 10 counties in corn and soybean production of the two states. It did help, did it not?
Those areas had been dry, Max. Most of the good rains up until this point had been in the northern Corn Belt, and you stretch that even westward into parts of Iowa, Minnesota. Those are the areas that had gotten good rains. The areas that had been dry, as you said, included central Illinois, west central Indiana. Parts of Michigan are still dry. They didn't catch those rains this week. So it's a welcome rain. I think some of these areas would even welcome a bit more.
We took some of the rain premium out of the market, did we not? Some of the weather premium?
Quite a bit. I think that from last Friday's close, that would be about a 10% drop in December new crop corn futures, almost 45 cents from that high close on Friday to Wednesday's close. So the market really had a weather premium in there. Part of that was probably speculative buying.
A farmer in Tippecanoe County, Indiana, said he needs another one in about 2 weeks. He says he's a couple of weeks away from pollination of the corn crop there, not far from Lafayette. So I would imagine the market will continue to watch, and especially some trouble spots. There are still some, are there not, in the Corn Belt where they have not picked up rain?
There are. I think that particularly, as you said, with pollination just around the corner now, the moisture needs really increase, and it can really dry out quickly, even after a rain. So the other thing that everyone's watching now is the high-pressure ridge that's centered over that western U.S., and it's anchored there for now, but if that were to migrate back east during pollination, that would be bad news. But fortunately for now, it seems to have moved west and really cooled things down.
Southern Illinois area, southern Indiana, down into the Boot Hill of Missouri, I've heard from growers in recent days. The pendulum really swung there. They had been wet early, and then they turned off dry. Are they still?
Well, it's scattered, I think is the best word I'd use. Parts of Missouri are dry, more the western areas of Missouri. Some of the areas of central Illinois, southern Illinois, did miss those rains this week, at least the heavy rains. And at this point, that's good for the wheat harvest, but the corn and beans, I think, would certainly need a drink at some point here. Probably southern Indiana, southern Illinois, corn pollination is creeping up very quickly, probably around the 4th of July.
We're just days ahead of major government reports as we get an update on these crops. The acreage report will be big, won't it?
It will be. I think there seems to be an underlying belief that we're going to see more soybean acres. We'll see. We'll see what they do with the corn acres, because there were some questions on the March report that total acreage in the March report was low. So the bias is where we're going to see a contraction in corn acreage in next week's report. That's certainly possible. I would caution your listeners, though, that the missing acres, if you will, from that March report could very well still show up in this report. So at this point, I think that the bias of the market is more soybean acres, unchanged to lower corn.
When that report comes out, how quickly will it fade and the attention again to be turned toward weather?
Very important, because I think it will immediately turn back to the weather, because we've got a three-day weekend coming up shortly after that. The report comes out on Thursday, June 30th, but we'll trade that rest of the day and then on Friday. But then July 4th, is a Monday, so there'll be a three-day weekend there. There will be no trading, and then a critical two-week span of corn pollination. So there's no question that we'll immediately turn back to what the weather looks like going into that early pollination.
Let's continue our discussion about weather for just a moment. Let us make an assumption here that we continue to pick up some rains over the Corn Belt and that the corn crop goes into that pollination period just fine. Do we still have lingering weather worries about how the soybean crop gets finished up?
I think that the soybean crop, as your listeners know, Max, it really is contingent on what happens in August. I think we can't get ahead of ourselves. So I think with the demand worldwide so strong and the South American supplies tighter than what we anticipated earlier this spring, there's a great deal of attention on this pod set, pod fill period for this 2016 bean crop.
You alluded to it a little bit earlier, the speculative element in the markets. What's been going on with those folks here the past few days? Obviously, the Brexit vote has drawn quite a bit of attention.
You know, I think that I have not sensed that there's panic liquidation. We'll take a look at the Commitment of Traders report and see. But I've sensed that there's at least a hesitancy to buy more, even on the pullback. We'll see. But I think that I haven't sensed that it's a full-scale run for the door liquidation phase that we're in yet. But I do think that they've pulled back in terms of that aggressive buying phase that they were in.
The resiliency of the soybean market has been remarkable. I mean, it has been beaten back some, but we've never really seen a precipitous fall to a great extent, have we?
We need a large soybean crop. I think that the smaller crops that were harvested in Brazil and Argentina really emphasized how tight the world supplies are relative to demand. Now, we're not running out of old crop beans here in the U.S. We're going to have a 300, 325, maybe 350 carryout, but the demand is so strong, we need a large crop. And now that door is closed for South America. We need to have a good crop here in the U.S.
Brian, thank you for coming in. Always, it's good to talk to you, and we'll look forward to the next opportunity.
Appreciate the opportunity, Max. Always good to be with you.
That's Brian Basting, Advanced Trading, located in Bloomington, Illinois. And indeed, the market, as I mentioned earlier, that visit recorded before the final vote was in on Brexit. And of course, yesterday we saw what happened to world markets in stocks and in metals and in other commodities. And for the week in the grain market, for example, corn down 12%, its biggest weekly decline in 3 years. Soybeans were down 5.6% and wheat traded down 3.3%. So that means when we start trading on Monday, the July soybean contract will be at $11.03, down 15 and a quarter cents yesterday. July corn will start at 384 and a half after dropping 2 cents yesterday. So we're looking at corn prices now below that $4 level until March of next year. And then the September wheat will start the next week trade at 454 and three quarters. Coming up, we'll take a look at what was going on a year ago in the world of agriculture when we continue on the Saturday morning show. Coming up on 6 minutes before 6 o'clock, a year ago at this time, agriculture, particularly the poultry segment, was going through a terrible time. Dr. Jerry Dick is the Associate Administrator of APHIS at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and I sat down with him recently and talked about what was happening a year ago.
The 2015 outbreak actually started in December of 2014, but we refer to it as the 2015 outbreak, was the largest animal disease outbreak in U.S. history. It affected 21 states, but Minnesota and Iowa were especially hard hit. We depopulated almost 50 million birds in those states as part of our eradication effort, and spent nearly $1 billion on response, cleanup, and indemnity costs. That doesn't include the lost exports, the temporary shortages, or price increases for certain poultry, and certainly doesn't take in all of the losses that the producers had as a result of that outbreak.
But we did learn, and so far this year, not much in the way of another outbreak. He talked about what they have learned in the past year.
Although we've been fortunate to avoid a repeat of 2015, we really must continue to be vigilant when it comes to HPAI. And so we in APHIS have been actively conducting wild bird surveillance across the United States. Since July of last year until now, we have already met our target of 40,000 wild birds sampled statistically across the United States, and we will continue to do that wild bird sampling. The way that helps us is that if we get a sense of the virus that's actually circulating in the wild bird population, then we know what areas those birds are detected in, and we can take proactive steps to notify producers that we have detected certain viruses within their state.
Dr. Jerry Dick, who is Associate Administrator of APHIS at the Department of Agriculture. Well, back on May 2nd, many of us lost a personal friend. The world of agriculture, particularly the corn and ethanol industry, lost a booster. Marty Andreas passed away May 2nd at the age of 77, a victim of cancer. But during his lifetime, he was involved in getting the ethanol industry going, the corn sweetener industry going, as an executive at Archer Daniels Midland. And he was located in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, where he was part of a corn sweetener industry before he joined ADM. But he spent decades with ADM and boosted the ethanol beyond belief, because when Marty started talking about making fuel out of agricultural crops instead of oil, they sort of laughed at him. But Bob Dineen, who is president and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, at the Celebration of Life in Cedar Rapids, Iowa yesterday, said Marty was there in the beginning when President Jimmy Carter gathered agribusiness together to challenge them to produce a domestic renewable fuel in the midst of the oil crisis in the 1970s. If you were around then, you know the lines at gasoline stations, because there was a shortage. And so the agricultural industry, the corn industry, and people like Marty Andreas said, we can do this. We can produce fuel for our vehicles from renewable products grown on farms in the United States and refined at ethanol plants in rural communities across the country. And I probably interviewed Marty 50 or 60 times during the time that we were working on this and other agricultural activity. And whatever the conversation, eventually he would get a turn to ethanol. He served outside the industry. A lot of my work with Marty took place as a member of the board of the Illinois Agricultural Leadership Foundation. But he was on the board of Mount Mercy University. A lot of kind words from the president of the university yesterday. And all in all, quite a guy. And about 200 people turned out yesterday at the Cedar Rapids Country Club to celebrate Marty's life. And the only comment I had, knowing how Marty could turn any conversation to promoting ethanol, I can only imagine in the last several weeks, God has learned more about ethanol than he really wanted to know. But that was Marty Andreas, celebration of his life yesterday, Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And in August, the Illinois Ag Leadership Foundation will present posthumously the Torch of Leadership Award to Marty and several outstanding Illinois agricultural leaders. Well, that's our time. Thank you for joining us here on the Saturday Morning Show. We look forward to it every week.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.